Welcome, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast with Top Producer. Today, I'm actually doing an interview with Steve Brewer from Iowa. And Steve and I, offline, were sort of discussing when we actually first met. And we think it was at a Top Producer conference back in about 2013. And then Steve asked me to speak at his Land Investment Expo. We'll go over that. And also, I came out and spoke with some of his clients regarding the 2014 Farm Bill. Steve has a very interesting story, both growing up on a farm and still sort of active in his family farm operation a little bit, but primarily he has expanded into other opportunities, so to speak, and we'll go over that today. So let's go ahead and get started with the interview. Steve, how are you doing?
Doing great, Paul. Appreciate you including me.
And just for those people that probably aren't that curious, but Steve is in Iowa and it is 6 a.m. his time, and I'm in Washington State and it's 4 a.m. my time, but that's okay. I'm sort of an early bird anyway. So I think Steve, you and I can get more done between like 3 a.m. and 8 a.m. than we can between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m.
You know, the problem with emailing you in the middle of the night is you respond and then I have to respond back to you. But I appreciate your late hours and your early mornings.
Yeah, well, that's just something probably the last 15 years. That's just how I roll, which means probably about 8 p.m. I'm not worth anything. But but we'll see how that goes. Why don't you let's start off with just a brief description of your family farm history and so on. Just fill everybody in where you're located, the farm operation, etc.
Yeah, Paul. So I grew up in Warren County, Iowa, just south of Des Moines. My dad and brother run the farm today. My folks were Pioneer dealers for 23 years growing up. My grandfather ran the Ford New Holland dealership in the county seat where I grew up as well. So I grew up, farming, loading farmers' trucks with seed and working in the implement dealership with my grandfather, and had a little sweet corn and pumpkin business for some walking around money. And so grew up very much in agriculture. I went off to college in 1999, went to the University of Northern Iowa. My brother continued to run the family farm with my dad. It's a corn and soybean operation. So they're still in the seed sales business, and they run a pretty decent sized farm for Southern Iowa now. Again, all corn and soybeans.
Well, good. And, it seems like, a lot of the farmers that I run into in Iowa and in the Midwest are also Pioneer seed dealers. You know, I got quite a few friends out there that are farmers and they also have a Pioneer seed business. So, you went to school at University of Northern Iowa up in Cedar Falls. I actually know where it's located at. And what decided you? Obviously, there probably wasn't a big enough operation to come back to the family farm. After college, what did you decide to do at that point?
Yeah, when I was in college, I actually came home and farmed on the weekend and whatnot. But I always had a passion for real estate. And, to be honest with you, growing up, I wanted my family to buy any farm that would come up for sale. And we didn't buy enough of them as far as I was concerned. And so I fell in love with real estate while I was in college. A neighbor actually sold me a little piece of land just down the road. And again, I used that sweet corn and pumpkin money that I had growing up to buy that first piece of real estate when I was in college. I got my real estate license while I was in college. And when I graduated, I started selling real estate the very next day. So got right into it and kind of had that passion at a young age.
Now, when you first started out selling real estate, was it primarily focused strictly on farm real estate or was it other real estate? Go over those details a little bit.
Yeah, and maybe I can pivot to a little history on People's Company to lay that groundwork. People's Company was a farm management company that was located in Warren County where I grew up. It started out in the 1960s as the farm management department for a bank called People's Bank. We were spun out of the bank during a bank merger in 1972. And if you follow that original bank charter through, we would be part of Regions Bank today. But we were independent from 72 on. And so Bob Fridley and Dick Davitt were the two folks that were at People's Company when we got spun out. And Bob sold farms and Dick managed farms. And in fact, my family farmed several farms that the company managed. And so that was my connection to People's Company. My real estate professor at UNI was neighbors with the gentleman that bought People's Company from that prior ownership group. And so it was a small world deal. I contacted them and asked if I could get a job right out of college working within the real estate and farm management space. So I got into it when I was 22. I looked like I was 16 and, you know, yeah. I was trying to peddle real estate. And at that time, you know, I would, frankly, I'd sell anything just to try to make a buck.
Right.
But the focus of People's Company always was farmland. And that was quickly where I pivoted into. But there was a little bit of residential and commercial that came with that early on. And I got full time into the farmland side of it as quick as I could.
And certainly over the years, the People's Company, it isn't strictly based in Iowa anymore. What is your current footprint across the U.S.?
Yeah, so we started really ramping up after I took over back in 2003. It's hard to believe that was 18 years ago now. But today we're licensed in 26 states on the brokerage side, and I think 30 states on the appraisal side. We've got an office up in Marlette, Michigan. We've got an office in Champaign, Illinois, one in Jonesboro, Arkansas. We acquired a firm over in Omaha, Nebraska last year. We've got an office in Fresno and San Diego, California, one up in your backyard or in your backyard in Walla Walla, Washington. And then, of course, our office is here in Iowa. And we spent a lot of time thinking about that through the years. We looked at all the USDA data and the NCREIF data to see where farmland transactions were happening. And we wanted People's Company to have that national footprint where we could have boots on the ground in all those major agricultural areas. And, you know, you quickly realize if Iowa is not number one at it, California is. And if California isn't, then Washington probably is. And so, you know, you kind of look at our footprint and we've identified those major ag areas, and that's where we've established our offices.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, especially maybe a lot of our listeners are what I would say sort of Midwest based, you know, corn and soybean growers. But until you get out to California and see the large scale operations down there, and even here in Washington state with the permanent crops and potatoes and so on and so forth, there's quite a few pockets around the country that really grow a lot of good ag products. So I think you've done a good job there of expanding into those areas. Now, that's sort of the People Company story. You know, then you decided, I think, to start what I would call the Land Investment Expo. I think I have that terminology correct. Give me the history, or give our listeners the history on how that came about, why you decided to start it, and so on.
Yeah, so about, we're on our 15th year of the Land Expo coming into next year. And so started that real early on. And I was at a conference in Chicago a group that is organized that calls themselves the Chicago Farmers, and they had their land investment fair. And my first year in the real estate business, I actually went over to that with my folks, and my mom on the way home said, gosh, why doesn't somebody do something like this in Iowa? And I thought, I don't know. And so we rented a hotel ballroom and hired Ken Root, who was the big show host on WHO at the time, to be our moderator and master of ceremonies. And we launched our first Land Investment Expo. And that first year, we got Undersecretary Tom Doerr at the time and a couple other high profile speakers that accepted our invitation. And that would have been back in about 2008. Right when the farmland market was really heating up and there was a lot of interest in farmland, and our timing was great. I think we had about 250 people show up to that. Granted, a lot of them were relatives that I was begging to fill up chairs in the room, but we got a great showing. And so every year we've continued to expand it. It's gotten bigger every year, and we've improved the caliber of the event every year. And it's really turned into one of the, I think, one of the leading conferences in the country now.
Oh, I definitely agree. You've certainly have had, I would say, an eclectic group of featured speakers. Go over some of the speakers that you've had and maybe fill in maybe the most unique one or your favorite one, or just go over three or four that that our listeners might be interested in learning about.
Yeah, so it's been interesting as we try to do this, because every year we've tried to improve the caliber of the event. And of course, then your audience gets this expectation that every year's keynote speaker is going to be, you know, better than the previous year's keynote speaker. And so we took a big leap of faith one year. We hired Jim Rogers from Singapore, who's famous for talking about the commodity bull markets and farmland. And he's often made quotes that farmers will be driving Lamborghinis, and real outspoken guy. And we brought him in, and that was incredibly well received. And we followed that up with Boone Pickens. And Boone was a really exceptional speaker. And we got to be friends after the event, and we would bet on Iowa State, Oklahoma State football and basketball games. And he started to invite my wife and I down to the games in Stillwater. And I've got a $20 Billy signed here on that first bet that he lost when Iowa State knocked off his Sooners. But so after Boone Pickens, we invited Donald Trump to speak. And that would definitely be the turning point in the event. That would have been about 2015 or 16, right before, you know, the election cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, Trump had been talking about running for president, but he nobody believed he actually really would. And I had been courting him for a while, trying to get him to our event. And, you know, frankly, he wasn't interested in farmland. And so the only reason why you would speak at our event, if you're in his shoes, was to, you know, to get the media talking about a potential presidential run. And so anyhow, I had an opportunity to get to know him, went out to New York and met him in Trump Tower, had dinner with him while he was in Iowa. And he was a great speaker, and he was supposed to deliver a 45-minute speech. I think he talked for an hour and 45 minutes and and really won our audience over. And, there's a lot of people that, you know, love him, obviously, and there's a lot of people that don't. And I've tried to remain neutral on it. But definitely the most interesting high profile speaker we've had. But then we've had Martha Stewart, in, which she was interesting. Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank, as a keynote. We just had some great speakers, and, we're working on, next year right now, trying to figure out who we're going to get. And it just gets harder and harder and harder to find one of those household names that you can somehow tie into real estate and farmland.
You're right. Everybody's expecting it to be even better each year. Well, at some point you sort of reach that plateau, so you hope at least you can keep it on that same level. I know on a personal note, I was you invited me out to speak this January, you know, on a breakout session, and I was planning, I had my airplane ticket, I was all ready to come. And I think I sent you an email or a text. I think it was a text about 2 days before saying, oops, Steve, I got a bad case of COVID, so I'm not going to be able to make it. So I think you were one of the few that was actually doing a in-person event at that point in time. So how'd that expo turn out?
You know, it turned out great. We really rolled the dice against our better judgment, and there was some conflict in the office of whether we should move forward or not. But, you know, we took a gamble on it. The event space that we're at holds 1,500 people. And so we had a smaller size. We were able to socially distance the tables. Everybody wore a mask, and we offered the virtual option as well. And so about half of our attendees were virtual, and half of them were in person. And yeah, you know, the networking is a huge part of our event, where I just love seeing a farmer sitting at the same table as a hedge fund manager, and you hear a couple of weeks later about a deal that got put together at the event. So, you know, with the virtual, you lose that ability to see those personal relationships develop. But there was people on the conference on the virtual side of it that would never have come to Iowa in January that we really opened up the Land Expo to a broader audience. And we were able to have General Kelly as a keynote speaker. Anthony Scaramucci interviewed General Kelly. Ambassador Branstad gave one of his first public addresses since coming back from China. And of course, his insight on COVID, having been the ambassador during that period, was exceptional. And so we had a great program, and the people that were there wanted to be there. And, yeah, you know, we didn't have any issues with COVID post event. So it was a great success.
You know, with speaking of having it in Iowa in the middle of January, have you ever thought about maybe going to Orlando or Hawaii or something like that in January?
You know, I have, and a lot of people like yourself have suggested it. And, you know, what's interesting about Iowa is you have the caucuses here every 4 years, yeah, and that's where you get this big political, you know, audience, and the national media ascends on Des Moines. And that's why people like Trump, you know, come to our event.
Yep.
And
yep.
And I remember during the presidential election that Trump was in, the presidential debate was in Des Moines at that same time. And I was standing in the hotel lobby that evening, and Chris Christie came in and, you know, ended up having a cocktail with Chris and his wife at the hotel lobby bar. And so, you know, Iowa is the epicenter of agriculture. And I always, yep, ask our keynote speakers, you know, why'd you accept my invitation to speak? And they always say, hey, I've never been to Iowa. I wanted to learn about Iowa and come see what it was all about and meet folks from Iowa. And I think you lose that if you move it to one of those tropical, yeah, environments. So
I tend to agree. I know that top producer this year, instead of having the event in Chicago, which, you know, in January, Chicago can be fairly cold at times, you know, that wind coming off the lake, they decided to have it in Nashville. I was headed to Nashville to speak, and they had an ice storm, so I couldn't even get there. So, you know, it's you just never know what's going to happen in January, February in the Midwest, but I definitely agree with you.
Okay.
Right now, we're just going to take a quick break for a sponsor message, and then we'll be right back with our second part of the podcast.
Get timely updates about taxation, accounting, succession planning, and other issues that are unique to farmers and agribusiness processors. Find out about major agribusiness events and how to comply with new laws that affect your business. Subscribe to Farm CPA at blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness and experience the CLA promise. blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness.
Welcome back to the Farm CPA podcast. I'm your host, Paul Niefer. Today, I'm doing an interview with Steve Brewer from Iowa. So you started at People's Company, and then after a few years, you developed the Land Investment Expo. But you also have sort of branched out into other I'm going to call it other ventures or other businesses. Go over what those businesses are.
Yeah, so as part of hosting this Land Investment Expo and being in the farmland space, you know, we quickly saw, you know, the interest from both farmers and investors that wanted to connect in the farmland space. And I always make the comment about investors, you know, farmers don't like investors unless it's their own investor, right? Where they can leverage them to expand their operation. And so it's not always a popular thing, but it's just a fundamental reality of the way agriculture is structured right now. And so as we started meeting folks through this Land Expo and other events that we were at, I quickly realized there was a lot of capital that wanted to invest in agricultural assets. And, you know, in my own farming operation, you know, my brother would have farms that would come up for sale that he wasn't going to buy. I would go find an investor to put into the deal, and my brother would retain the acres, and the investor got an off-market deal, and I made a little money for putting the deal together, and it was a win-win-win.
Yep.
And so we started looking at how we could scale that. So we put together several businesses around that investment piece. One business is called DST Farms. DST stands for Delaware Statutory Trust, and there's a provision in the tax code that allows you to 1031 exchange in and out of a asset into a DST and avoid paying capital gains. And so we've set up the first farmland DST in the country. So somebody who owns a highly appreciated apartment building in California could 1031 exchange into a farmland DST. We also set up another platform called Megma that's set up more for that retail investor that wants to have a smaller bite at a piece of farmland. And Megma stands for liquid earth and bringing liquidity to the farmland marketplace. And so we've been structuring several investments on that platform as well. And then we've got a traditional asset management business called Alternative Equity Advisors, where we work with high net worth individuals, institutions, family offices that want to build farmland portfolios. And we'll do the acquisition work and the diligence work and the ongoing management work to build those farmland portfolios for them. And then we've got another little business where we originate some real estate debt and do some structured finance deals as well. And so that all fits in nicely alongside the People's Company businesses, which are, I guess we never got into those, Paul, but those core businesses for People's Company are the brokerage and auction business, the appraisal business, and then our farm management business.
Yeah. And I think I almost know who even originally talked to you about setting up the DST entity. I wonder who that person might be.
So. You know what? I should have your picture on the website.
No, that's probably good that you don't. So speaking of farm real estate, I actually ended up buying some ground in eastern Iowa last year. I think I got a pretty good bargain. You know, when you bought it during the middle of the pandemic and the price of corn was like $3, I was able to pick it up at a pretty good price. But we know in the last 6 months or maybe the last year or so that the price of real estate in your area for farmland has gone up. What are the trends that you're seeing maybe in Iowa and also across the country as far as farmland investment right now?
It's wild, Paul. It's probably the hottest real estate market I've been a part of in 18 years. And you've just got this perfect storm, high commodity prices, obviously some nice payments with the, MFP, CFAP payments and whatnot that came in last year. And then you just look at interest rates and commodity prices and the supply of money. I don't know if this is completely factually correct, but I'd read something that 38% of all the money in circulation in the U.S. was printed since March of 2020. And so you just during COVID, folks that were stuck in their homes, worried about the food supply chain, where their food comes from. This newfound appreciation for what farmland means. The stock market got, cut in half, and your farmland's just sitting there steady, holding its value. You can get out and walk on it and touch it. It's an inflation hedge. And so yep. What we have right now is farmers aggressively buying again with farm profitability up. And then you've got this outside capital that appreciates the attributes of a farmland investment now more than ever. And so this farmland market's incredibly dynamic, and it's almost scary. it's hotter than it was back in, 2012, 2013.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I was doing a Farm Journal event over in northeastern Iowa back last summer. I think it was July. It was fairly humid there. Well, not too bad, but And I was on a panel with two bankers, and Tyne Morgan had asked us what our view of farming might be over the next few years. And I said, hey, I'm very optimistic. And this was right, you know, corn's $3 in the pandemic. And I said, I was very optimistic. And she almost chewed me out for being optimistic. And, you know, 6 months later, you know, it came true. So now we don't know how long it's going to last. But certainly the attitude of farmers right now is a dramatic 180 degree reversal from what it was a year ago.
Absolutely. And what's crazy though, is it wasn't but a year ago, those, you know, interviews were about farm bankruptcies and distress. Yeah. And we went from that to this incredibly hot market, and it happened fast. And that's what's scary about it. I've kind of said, it feels like you're driving down the interstate at 100 mile an hour right now and everything's going great, but you just feel uneasy.
Where's that patch of ice going to show up that you hit and you don't know it. So that's right. Speaking of 1031s, you know, President Biden came out last week with his budget proposals, and part of that is what we call the Green Book. That's outlining how that he's going to pay for the budget. And one of those discussions or proposals dealt with 1031s where it would restrict the amount of gain that you can postpone. How do you think that would affect farmland transactions and so on? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and it would have a major impact. A significant number of our transactions have a 1031 component to them. And, you know, if you take that away, that'll really change people's motivations on, you know, buying and selling land. And I just had a call with somebody yesterday that said, gosh, I like buying farmland, but whatever I buy now, I feel like I'm going to be trapped in that asset where if I want out, I'm not going to have a way to move my money around without that 1031 exchange provision. So, you know, the folks that I've talked to, feel, you know, that this is, you know, got a long ways to go, with both the Republicans and the Democrats, and hopefully it won't go the way it looks like it could go. But there's a lot of support from the Realtors Association and the banking associations, and there's a lot of pressure to keep that 1031 exchange in place. And but I think you'll hear a lot about it here for a while.
Yeah, and I think as we're taping this, President Biden came out yesterday and sound like he's willing to give up increasing the corporate tax rate. He's willing to drop the infrastructure down to $1 trillion instead of, what was it, $2.5 trillion, whatever it was to start. I think what he's finding out very, very quickly is he's no longer worried about the Republicans. He's worried about keeping his Democrats on the table. And, you know, there's a couple senators, I think for sure, aren't interested in raising taxes, especially on ag or real estate. And he probably doesn't even have the votes in the House. You know, he can only afford to have, what, five? I think it's five House members would switch from Democrat to Republican and he'd lose control of the House. So I'm sort of with you. I think some of the provisions might go through, but I don't think the 1031, they already restricted it to strictly real estate. And I think most everybody wants to keep it that way. At least that's my feeling right now. But we'll see. You know, it's going to be, it will be probably through the end of the year before we know for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, the one thing about it is it's kind of like my investor comment earlier. Nobody, you know, likes them unless it's their own. And you know, raising taxes sounds fine unless you're raising your taxes, right?
Yeah.
So when it comes right down to it, I don't think anybody wants to see their taxes go up, and there will be a lot of pressure there on this particular provision.
Yeah, I did a blog post when his proposals first floated out there, and I was just sort of coming up with what the top marginal tax rate would be if all these proposals went through. And I think if I lived in California and I was in the highest tax bracket, which currently California has, and I'm self-employed, which I currently am, and so on, if you added it all up, your marginal tax rate could be as high as 70%. So, you know, when you think about generating an extra dollar of income and 70% of it's going to go to taxes, there's not really much of an incentive to want to go out and do investments or create extra income if you only get to keep 30 cents out of a dollar.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, that would be devastating. So
yeah. So I think in a couple of his provisions that he was really touting actually didn't make the green book. So I think he's realizing that some of these are not as popular as he once thought. So at least that's what we're hoping right now. So, you know, and as we get closer to the end of the discussion with you, I always have a couple key questions that I ask at the end. And one of those is, what keeps you up at night? What do you worry about, at least right now?
We're just, so focused on growing our business, and we've got a lot of balls in the air, and honestly, just don't want to drop any of them. And so a lot of sleepless nights as we've taken risk through the years and whatnot. I've gotten over my fear of the government ruining our life, right? So some of those, and maybe I shouldn't, but some of those fears, we sit at a lot of kitchen tables where people make decisions based on elections. And frankly, it's good for our business because, just like right now, the fear of capital gains going up and the elimination of 1031 exchanges that leads to transactions and maneuvering. Yep. And that sort of thing. So, I'm a fairly young guy, but I've been through a few political administrations now, and, every time you wake up and the sun's still shining and, yep. Things keep moving forward. And so I don't get too worried about those things you can't control. And I'm more worried about the things I'm doing myself that I may screw up.
And then last, what's your definition of success in farming or success in business?
It's interesting having grew up in that close-knit, Warren County community where everybody, a lot of coffee shop talk and agriculture, as you're well aware. And
yep.
And a lot of people looking over your shoulder, judging what you're doing or how you're doing it and that sort of thing. And frankly, it's pretty tough to keep a good reputation, if you're aggressively, growing your business and whatnot. And so for me, it's just being proud of the work you do and proud of the people that you're doing it with and doing it in a way that you're giving back a little and making the world a better place. And so for me, I'm proud of what we've built here with People's Company, and hopefully we've been able to, add value to our clients and the agricultural industry. And you get to meet a lot of great people in this business and learn that there's a lot of different ways to view the world than maybe you thought, the way you saw it growing up and that sort of thing. So, agriculture is a great spot to be and getting the respect of the people that are in that industry, it's a big deal.
Yeah. No, that's a good ending thought there. So again, Steve, thank you very much for taking time out of your day at 6 a.m. Central Time to have this discussion. And I'm sure that I'll probably be seeing you sometime in the next month or two somewhere, either in Walla Walla or Iowa or somewhere across the country.
You can count on it, Paul. So appreciate you including me here and fitting in this early call on your end of things as well.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. I'm Paul Niefer, and we'll be back next week with a new episode of the Farm CPA podcast with Top Producer.